It's Monday, June 30th, 2014, and welcome to episode 166 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Mike Gioia.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the podcast about teaching and learning with technology. So, Mike, it is summer halftime.
Yes, and it feels like preseason more than halftime.
Well, I just starting to think it feels like postseason myself, as crazy as the summer has been. But we're going to talk a little bit today. It's going to be an abbreviated podcast. We just want to do one here in the middle of summer. As I said, it's June 30th, so July 1st is kind of another time to kick it into a higher gear as we approach the start of school.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, most people in an academic setting are like, oh, summer break, you know, go back, go on vacation. And that may be true to the students and faculty, but the
staff. Yeah, some faculty and students. Yes, but the time marches on. You know, we're still here updating systems frantically. This is the best time because we do have a little bit lower user level to do all the upgrades and things.
Sure. I mean, we still got users on campus.
Oh, yes, lots of users still going. There never really is a downtime anymore. No matter what system you want to bring down, you're going to be affected. Somebody.
Not even Christmas, because we've gotten yelled at for doing something like the day of or day before Christmas.
Yep. So it's all very busy. So today I thought we'd just start out and share some of the projects. So Cindy's out on the road again this time, so we'll catch up with her later. So here we go. Up first, I thought we'd do just a quick summer update and tell you some of the projects that we're currently working on. And as I said, we're kind of trying to pace the work. We've only got X number of weeks now before the start of the semester. So some of the major projects we're working on here in the College of Education and Professional Studies, we're putting in our new systems. Every year we get new computer systems to put in, and we rotate those out. So some of the older systems are going to be replaced. We've got our virtual device infrastructure lab. We've got some updates and things to do there. And then also the other big project that we're working on is moving one of our labs, the main ITC lab, over to Windows 8.1. So we've got those projects underway. And anytime you go through one of those major changes, in this case an operating system, you know, we're trying to provide some materials and things for users to kind of get up to speed. And it's really going relatively smooth. Many of our users were Windows 7 users, so going from Windows 7 to Windows 8 really is not that big of a change if you explain to them that the desktop is still there.
Yes.
They kind of freak out when they see that start screen and tiles.
Yeah. You know, and I just kind of made the transition this calendar year from 7 to 8 and then 8.1, and wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
We're a little bit more tech savvy than some of the users.
Well, I try preparing. We've got, of course, they can schedule one-on-one appointments, but I send out an email with a few links, and I tell them once we put the system in, I give them really about a 15-minute overview, and they're, you know, almost everybody's really comfortable with that. And the one shortcut key, you know, for Windows 8, if you ever get lost, just hit the Windows flag, the Windows D, and that takes you to desktop.
Yeah.
And then just the Windows flag will take you back to the start screen. So just those two keyboard shortcuts, and most of our users don't have touch screens, so that's the other
app. I actually I have a my mouse has on top of the, well, back in the day, the new forward and back buttons, mm-hmm. On top of the other, it actually has a lower button on the thumb that I've actually set up to send me to the flag, is actually acts as the flag key.
Yeah.
So it can take me back and forth, and the main icon on our standardized setup here is the big first one is desktop.
Yeah.
So, which is nice.
Yeah. And we really haven't found, I can't think of any major issue at all. You know, we're always worried about compatibility with, you know, some of the older programs that some of the faculty, staff, and students were running. But it's, you know, knock on wood here, it's going relatively smooth. So we've got those updates going on. And then the other big thing that's still on the radar screen, I haven't done nearly as much as what I wanted to, but our university's transitioning over to Office 365.
And then that's going to be a huge transition. The students, we've moved the mailboxes, but I still don't think they, and like we were talking before, they just don't really understand the power of Office 365. And, you know, your last actual blog post, the document that I wrote up first for it, we actually did the
Word Online.
The Word Online, and where we were both editing the document at the same time in front of each other, was pretty cool.
Yeah, just like Google Docs.
Yeah, which was really cool, I thought.
And it's free. You know, again, people don't realize. I mean, even outside the university, it's free with a Microsoft account. You get Word Online, Excel Online, and PowerPoint Online.
Yeah.
And it provides those collaboration tools. And I don't think many people know, because they think Google Docs whenever they think the online collaboration. But really, I think they've been able to do that since 2010. So, you know, 3 going on 4 years.
Right.
But it's kind of one of those, you know, best kept little secrets out there. But we really need to get the word out there. And the other big one that I've really been trying to bring to the forefront more as an educator, I really feel like OneNote is one of those programs that's just so overlooked by so many educators and students. And it has so much to offer, whether it be OneNote or Evernote or some of those online note-taking tools, but it's built into Office 365.
Right. Yeah, and it's great. I've been using it more and more every day. I try to get as paperless as I'm trying to get to zero paper as much as I possibly can, except for maybe the notepad next to my phone. Someone wants to call me as opposed to through some email or chat or something like that. But yeah, using the OneNote has really helped my team collaborate better, actually, and get some cross-chaining and functionality, because that's what we've been working on this summer, is really try to automate certain tasks that are causing a couple of people in my office to prohibit them to work at their full potential because they can't do anything new, they can't do anything more innovative, because they are just sucked down with these daily tasks that are time-consuming and archaic paper processes.
Trying to find the different way to do things, to automate it a little bit. And the other major thing going on this summer, in fact, going on right now, the end of June, first part of July, is the ISTE conference, International Society for Technology and Education. A large percentage of people in my personal learning network on Twitter are attending that. So I'm seeing all the hashtags ISTE 2014, and I'm following along on that, even though I can't be down in Atlanta. There's so much you can do virtually, and no, it's not nearly the same as being there face-to-face or whatever. But at least you can kind of catch up on the news, just do a quick scan or do a search on the hashtag, and just kind of, you know, keep up on some of the news and the developments and things going on. And then you can also participate in some of those conversations virtually, even though you're not there. So that's going on. And like I said, we've got a lot of things to do. We're kind of pacing ourselves here to get all the work completed. And so we're in good shape coming into the fall semester. But as I said, it's kind of halftime here in the summer.
Yeah.
So we need that pep talk to finish strong out there.
It feels more like overtime.
Well, that's the last week in August, I think, is when the overtime comes in. So, but we're out there making progress and very excited about some of the new innovations and possibilities. Like I said, one of the things, not that there is any spare time, but some things to work in, is that OneNote capability. And I've been working here, you know, just kind of getting an idea with what, you know, some of the students know. So it's really kind of been eye-opening. It's like, you know, hey, sign into your Office 365 account. Do you know you can do this? And, you know, the majority of them don't. So we need to do a better job there on the education side.
Right.
So that's kind of it for our summer halftime. So we'll leave it there. Okay, we're back, and it's time for our Tech Picks of the Week. And I thought I would let Mike go first, because I just told him that he would never guess what my tech pick was this week.
Yeah, and now I won't be able to focus on mine, because my brain
You've got a really good one, because, you know, we've been talking about this one and setting this one up. So go ahead and share your tech pick.
You've been on me about this one for a while. And, you know, you had me write the blog posts and everything, and this started about back in April.
We should mention that what it is first.
Well, no, that okay. ruins all the fun of it.
Okay.
That's my lead.
Let them guess.
It.
Okay,
yeah, that's kind of guess. But so actually, this kind of started in January. I went on a quest to being in information security to limit the amount of paper that I use, because paper falls into our aspect as well. And so my quest was to become 100% paperless. And I'm still getting to that point, but I'm getting better. But the initial start was to use Notability on my iPad mini. You know, my boss came to me and said, you know, you really should have a we should practice what we preach on using university equipment only to do our jobs and stuff like that. And I said, okay, that's fine. You know, buy me a tablet to take to meetings and take notes and all that stuff. And she was all for that. A couple weeks went by and there was no progress. You know, my new iPad mini from the university never showed up. And I finally asked her, I said, well, what's going on with that? She says, well, she goes, I was thinking, are you open to, you know, having something other than an iPad? You know how to use an iPad. You know how to use Notability. Are you open to something else? You know, we're supposed to be cutting edge with new technologies that we can push out to the students and faculty and staff. And I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, what do you got in mind? She's like, well, I don't know. I said, okay, well, let me think about it. As I went back and turned on my computer and kicked the tower underneath my desk and cursed for stubbing my toe about it, you know, I got thinking. I was like, you know, why don't I have an all-in-one? And I don't like laptops because the keyboards and stuff are too high up, and you know, for posture and all that stuff. And I was like sitting there, and one of my fellow coworkers was like, why don't you think about Surface? And I was like, well, you know, the other big thing is that I have my current desktop connected to four 24-inch monitors on my desk. Mm-hmm. you know, more monitors, the better, you know, mm-hmm. the faster you work. And it is true. You talk to a lot of people that gone from single to dual or dual to tri. They're like, I can't ever go back.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. So my blog post was about my endeavor to use a Surface Pro in place of a desktop, a tablet, and a laptop. Through this endeavor of how to actually connect four external monitors to a Surface Pro. And actually, it can be done. I found a blog post that led me through the process with the different components. You need three components, basically, three external components to do the process. And the really cool thing is about all of this is it is possible, and it can all be done with one cable, excluding the power cable to the Surface Pro, but one cable to power four monitors. And in actuality, you get five because the Surface Pro acts as a fifth monitor, touchscreen monitor, which is really cool.
Right. And for sure, we'll make sure we have the link in the show notes and things. And you've got some pictures and things out here in the blog post.
Yes.
But, you know, I think I mentioned to you, I've been doing a couple of presentations, and I've had a lot of interest of people coming up saying, hey, how do you do this? So I'm glad that we've got the blog post out there, and you've got the pictures of it's actually a pluggable docking station and a couple of adapters. So
yeah, and you know, it's not expensive at all to do it. I can't, with the Surface Pro 2 Pro docking station is what, like
150, 200,
150, 200. And you can only do two monitors with that. This with the three components, you need two USB 3.0 to VGA or DVI. This was DVI or HDMI adapters, and one special pluggable, like it's more of a USB hub.
Right.
And altogether with those is close to, it is close to 200, a little under, probably like 179 or so. Mm-hmm. And like I said, one cable from your Surface Pro into it. The pluggable docking station, as they call it, has, you use the two 3.0 USB outs to the adapters. And then it has two, it has an HDMI and a DVI audio or video out. It has four 2.0 USBs, your network, your Ethernet cable plugs into it, your headphones plug into it. It has a mic port. You know, all of that's being controlled by one USB 3.0 cable from the Surface Pro to this.
Yeah. So it makes for a really clean desktop besides all the cables behind the scenes.
Right. And maybe I should clean that up, but even working in IT, all of us are all tech geeks, so a lot of people are interested in seeing it mocked up. You know, pretty much plug and play. Typical guy, didn't read the instructions before I did this, and I plugged everything in and fired it up and then installed the drivers. Well, you need to install the drivers first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to read those directions first.
And of course, it was confusing at first because it's like the drivers came on a disk, and I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this disk?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, especially with a Surface Pro that has no DVD drive.
Yeah, so. Who uses a disk anymore? Yeah. Of course, we were saying that about who uses floppy drives anymore.
Right.
But, you know, no lag, no nothing. I've never really experienced any lag with the system.
So you've been using it like 3 or 4 months now.
You're right.
So you've got some experience to know if there were going to be some issues. Yep. Okay. Well, we'll make sure the link's out there in the show notes. I know just from the traffic from our ITC Chronicles blog website, it's got a lot of traffic. So that's your tech pick. We'll provide a link in the show notes. Now for mine, like I said, I'm going to completely fool you because you never would have guessed this. Compact fluorescent light bulbs.
Yeah, I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, so one of the things that I have on my to-do list is to put out some videos. And in a video, like a pseudo studio setup, you have to have good lighting. And I ran across these compact fluorescent light bulbs. I'm going to give you two picks relating to light this time. They're very affordable. I mean, if you've ever priced studio lights, it's like you get sticker shock really, really quick. But they've got some, like, 85-watt, 45-watt bulbs. For between 10 and 25, of course, the more wattage you have, the more expensive they get, and they are tuned to daylight. So whenever you set your do white balance and things on a video camera, they're rated to daylight light. You don't want to mix light sources and things. So I'll provide a link the brand that I have experience with is called Alzo, A-L-Z-O. I'll provide a link in the show notes. So if you're doing some video work, and for example, we were just doing some, I put together a PowerPoint. I have an HDTV out here in the hallway that we keep running continuously for students to update, kind of like a digital sign. And I'm trying to make it a learning experience. So I'll put some keyboard shortcuts out there and, kind of have like a question, it's like, what are the simple ones? Like what's control C, copy, of course they get right away. But what happens, if you press control shift T, for example, and if I go up here and then I do a control shift T, if you're in a browser, what that one does, just something extremely handy. I do this all the time in Chrome. I'll go up there and close the tab accidentally. It's like, didn't mean to close that tab. If you do control shift T, it will bring up the tab that you just closed.
I just learned something new today.
No, there you go. So, and that's, that's the idea behind it. The students and things coming up, trying to keep all this information free. And no matter how much we think our students are tech savvy and we hear the digital native argument all the time, just like that keyboard shortcut. That's just a very small piece of information, but if you've ever accidentally closed a tab on your browser and wished you could get it back, there's your answer, Control-Shift-T.
And I think it's not just that the students are, we think they're more tech savvy. I think they're less fearful to try technology than maybe, and maybe not so much the case as the technology age for us is getting older. I think we're all not as afraid to, we're not going to destroy a computer. We may light something we shouldn't have, but, we're not actually going to blow it up.
But part of that's discoverability, like we're just talking with Office 365 and not knowing about, the Word online, the Excel online. Yeah, and people don't know you can do an Excel survey online, automatically go collect the data and put it into a spreadsheet for you, with your Microsoft. Again, very similar to Google Forms, but unless you know about it, unless you've tried it, it doesn't exist, for you. So those are some of the discoverability things. So that's one. The second one that I came across, I always like to kind of try new things. And I was in at one of the big box home improvement stores the other day, and I ran across an LED light. I had a need to replace a fluorescent, the tube fluorescents, like up in one of my rooms upstairs. And it's constantly flickering. How fluorescent lights are. Mm-hmm. Well, this was an LED light, and it was advertised. I'll put a link in. I think it's by Commercial Electric, I think is the name of the company. But this was an LED light, and it's just like a little ribbon. I mean, if I didn't know it was a light, it just looks like a little ribbon with little dots on it, and the dots are the LED lights.
Sure.
And it's rated for 25 watts, but that's equivalent to 120 watts.
Right.
And what says on the box, we'll find out, but its expected lifetime is 34 years.
I mean, I'm in the middle of a renovation project in my master bedroom that you know about, and I put two can lights in the bathroom, and they're small little 3-inch can lights, and they're LEDs.
Yeah.
And they push out some bright light.
The big selling point, 34 years.
34
is how long?
Years.
50,000 hours or something like that to last. So
yep. I've swapped out brake tail lights that shouldn't.
And they're finally bright. I've tried those, probably early on when it wasn't quite mature, but they finally are getting bright. It's not like the dim LED lights.
I think that one of the major car companies, maybe it's Mercedes or BMW, BMW is actually using LED headlights now, mm-hmm. As opposed to the high intensity bulbs or the xenon bulbs.
So you reduce the heat big time.
Yeah, and energy it requires, and then the waste.
I mean, that's what the heat is the waste, you know, the waste product of.
Well, and just the waste of those bulbs as well. You know, I mean, for some reason, which I still don't understand why, is it incandescent bulb, but you can't recycle it. And I'm not sure why. It's all glass. I don't know. Maybe someone out there hears this can tell me why I can't recycle a light bulb.
Yeah.
You know, I understand the compact fluorescence for possible mercury, but in the gas that's in there, but, you know, incandescent bulbs is glass and some metal filaments. So.
Yeah. So anyway, I tried a couple of new light bulbs, one for the video studio. And like I said, I've already used it. What I did was on these keyboard shortcuts, I just put together just a real quick PowerPoint that just cycles through over and over and over again. Mixes in with some of our Tech Talk for Teachers podcast, I'll advertise, or our ITC Chronicles blog post. Because, you know, people walking into the ITC don't necessarily know that, all this stuff's online.
Yeah.
So it's just another mechanism to kind of get the word out. That wraps it up for episode 165 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.